Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast.
Have you guys ever wanted to be up in the stars, looking down from the moon? Well, that's where I am right now. I'm up in the stars. I'm in the moon. I'm somewhere where no one's ever been before besides the astronauts. I'm here. You're down there. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. I have a special guest. He's actually a guest that we've had as a special guest before. He's the first two-time special guest on the Fansmanship.com podcast. It's JD Scroggin from the Tribune. JD, what's going on?
What's going on, Owen? Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be back in here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Happy Monday. It's just me and JD this morning. Luke might join us in a little bit via the phone. We've got the technology. We can do that now, I think.
Maybe. We've got the technology.
We can
rebuild him.
Yeah, I don't think Luke needs rebuilding. But he did just get out of the gym, so he's building, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, we're happy to have JD here. It's the end of the summertime, and Cal Poly fall sports are coming up, and I am glad to... How many years have you been covering Cal Poly now, JD?
Let's see. I started in San Luis in 06, covered high schools for a couple years, started Cal Poly football in 08. That was the year with Ramsey's and Jonathan Daly and the greatest offense, in history, and... of Cal Poly, and they were one of the best offenses in the country. So that was my first fall. So it was 2008, and 9, 10, 11, 12. So we're coming up on, what, year four?
Five, maybe.
Yeah.
8, 9, 10, 11. And this is 2012, so it's your fifth year covering the football team.
Yeah. Awesome. I should go into engineering with that kind of math.
That's a funny joke, the second time especially. what have you been up to during the summer? I mean, I know that Cal Poly doesn't have, a lot of sports obviously going on when school's not happening, but there's got to be stuff to cover. So what have you been up to this summer?
Well, traditionally that's when our sports reporters take their vacation. So I did a 2-week vacation and went with the family and did some camping in Yosemite. Beyond that, I tried to, do as many stories on local baseball players and, managers. Got to talk to Robin Ventura, went down to Dodger Stadium and met him.
I was actually at a game. Saw you down there.
That's right. Yeah. We were there together, well, you might even say.
Yeah, you could say that, indeed.
Yeah, so, so I talked to a couple of the minor league guys, too, that have been, been through town, and now they're, in the pros. We call it in the pros. I did a few stories on local guys, did some Blues coverage, the local summer collegiate baseball semi-pro team. Olympics are starting, so I did a couple Olympic stories. You can check out sanluisobispo.com for all the recent stories on Stephanie Brown Trafton and Sharon Day and Jeff Powers.
Tell me about Stephanie and Sharon. Stephanie
Brown Trafton is the defending gold medalist in the women's discus. She's from Arroyo Grande High. Was born in San Luis Obispo and lived in the South County all her life and went to Cal Poly on a basketball scholarship. Also did track there. She tore her knee in basketball and then focused exclusively on track and field after that. And had kind of a building career where she, she was a high school state champion, had the state record, I believe, in California for the discus.
So she was a discus champion and went to college for basketball.
Basketball's her favorite sport. She went to do both, and that's an interesting thing about Cal Poly is a lot of their coaches are really welcoming to athletes who want to be multi-sport athletes, especially track and field and another sport.
The track coaches are pretty good about that.
Yeah, and formerly the football coaches, Rich Ellerson's regime, he was really into having, explosive athletes compete in track as well, and they all always had their spring practice in like February for football. So that way those guys could do track, I think, is why they did that.
And the theory there is probably that a cornerback isn't gonna it's not gonna hurt him to practice sprinting
No, it's like cross training. It benefits you. You stay in shape, and you know you're not getting out of shape, so you don't have to get back into shape.
Makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, there's been some football guys who have done baseball, and I think it's Cal Poly is a place where you can do that, and not a lot of programs will allow their athletes to play both, be multiple sports. So Cal Poly was one where Stephanie was encouraged to do basketball and track fields. Just when she hurt her knee, I think she kind of came to the realization that, okay, now I need to, where's the money going to be? You know, I got to focus on one or the other.
Got to figure it out. Yeah. And then the other one that you mentioned before Jeff was
Sharon Day.
Yeah.
She was a former national champion high jumper from Cal Poly, who went on to be an Olympian in the high jump in Beijing in 2008. She's now focusing on the heptathlon. Oh. She's in the women's heptathlon.
How many events in the heptathlon?
7. Yeah.
Tried to get you on that one.
Well, you know, I'd learned my lesson from the previous math faux pas. But yeah.
Your math joke before, I think, shut my computer down.
Did you like that I made that joke again?
That was fantastic.
Because you and I heard it the first time, but, you know.
But the computer didn't record it.
Yeah.
And then we tried to pick it up like nothing had happened.
I need the audience to hear that.
Yeah. And they did. And I'm sure they laughed, at least on the inside.
Possibly.
If not on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the heptathlon then. And so that's another local athlete. And then the one that I was most interested in. And we're kind of going out of order here, but I'm all about it.
We're going off the board.
Jeff Powers from Slow High, water polo player, UC Irvine.
Yep, Jeff Powers. I've interviewed him a couple times. Seems like every time the Olympics comes up, and this is his third Olympics with the U.S. water polo team.
He's 31 now, 30, 31. So this might be his last one, right? I mean, I would imagine, or maybe they play later than that. I don't know.
That was kind of the theme of the story that I wrote. Is this the end for him? He's got his wife just had twins in March.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he's been pretty much since the UC Irvine days. He's been bumming around Europe and he's been going around Europe from town to town playing professional water polo.
Sure.
Pretty much year round. I mean, the season goes almost year round there, and he hasn't really, aside from that, really started a professional career. And his wife has kind of been going along with him too for the ride. So I think his kind of days of being a nomad water polo pro are kind of coming to an end. Now that he's got twins, he's going to want to settle down and provide for them. And so that was kind of the theme of the story when I talked to him.
Yeah, with kids, that's a big deal. And I'll ask you about, family life. I know that you guys have a little one as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what's helped me relate to Jeff is when the 08 Olympics, I was engaged and planning a wedding. Jeff had just gotten married like a year or two before that. And now here we are. I've got a 10-month-old, and now he's got twins. So when we talk, we're the same age almost. I think he might be a year older than me, and I can really relate to him. You know what he's going through. You know, aside from being a world-class athlete, I can't relate to that. But I can relate to like the personal things that are going on in his life, and it kind of helps me to craft the story.
So yeah,
it's really cool talking to him.
And when I was down at UCSD doing undergrad back in 2001. I wrote for the paper down there for the UCSD Guardian.
Those years were out of order. You said them out of order.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Thanks for catching that. I was trying to picture what years during college I actually wrote for the paper. But I had the water polo beat. And at UCSD, the Tritons is our mascot. And they're Division II in pretty much everything except for water polo. And water polo, the coach down there, Denny Harper, has been down there for just a long, long time. I think he coached the men and the women. He has been super successful considering that UCSD doesn't give athletic scholarships. What the collegiate water polo world is made up of the Pac-10, and then you have the MPSF, or it was then anyway. And the Pac-10 always had probably the five best teams in the country, at least, like Stanford, UCLA, USC, Cal, and maybe a couple other of those schools.
Yeah, yeah. Where does the Big West rank in those?
There's no Big West. There's just the Pac-10 and then the MPSF. MPSF was like UCSB, UCSD was in that. LMU, Loyola Marymount, is in the MPSF. And so then there was one other conference. There's only three major conferences in NCAA water polo. The other one's on the East Coast.
Are you sure that hasn't changed?
That might have changed by now.
Are you sure Big West doesn't have men's?
Its own water polo conference?
I think it may. I think I always
schools
get, like,
in the Big West have water polo. I don't know that it's called the Big West. It may be now.
I always get tweets, you know, because I subscribe to all of the Big West, you know, Twitter accounts. And I think I subscribe to the water polo ones that they have.
Right.
I get them, and but since Cal Poly doesn't have a water polo team, I just ignore them. So, schools, I don't, I'm not really up on the news, but I'm thinking that a lot of the Big West teams might play
UCSB,
water polo. They might have enough to have a conference.
UOP, now. I think, probably has a team. Davis definitely has at least a women's. Yeah, they have a men's team, too. And then LMU's in the same conference there, too. It's kind of a weird California sport that way. But each
this
of the,
is real exciting for the people that are listening.
Hey,
I'm sure water
I don't care.
Polo. I'm sure water polo ranks like really high. We're gonna get huge ratings on this one.
Hey, we can't get much worse than we do. So anyway, you get three automatic bids, and then there's a fourth at large bid. So you get three from one from each conference, and there's a fourth at large bid that always goes to the Pac-10, or at least it did then, because the fifth place team from the Pac-10 was better than the champion from the other two conferences.
Sure.
But then there's a final four. And so UCSD, UC San Diego, is always, not always, they're, a lot of the time, they make it to the final four and get to play, you know, the Stanfords and the Cals and the USCs of the world. And so we got to see Powers play back, way back then. And he was probably the second or third best player on his UC Irvine team. There were one or two Eastern Europeans on that team that were 6'11 or so. And they were making backward shots. You were talking about that earlier. Why don't they do that more often?
Yeah.
Probably because they're getting drowned by the other guy.
it just seems, you know, the Magic Johnson no-look pass into the net. You know, like, it seems like it would catch guys off guard because you always see them ramp up for these huge shots.
Yeah, they do it all the time. My roommate in college was the water polo goalie, and he would talk about it. He got hit in the face with a lot of them, too, but... that's the thing about water polo goalies, but
I know they do the 1-2 where they put the ball in their hand underhand and then kind of throw it behind the back.
Yeah,
which is it's not necessarily with the finesse that I'm talking about, but just like the no look angry behind the back, like smash. That's probably the ones that hit him in the face.
Well, with these 6'11 guys, you'd see him go underwater. The ball would be above the water, but you'd see the guy go underwater, and sometimes he would throw it over his defender, go underwater and come back up and no look score. I saw, you know, there's some crazy
like
stuff
alley-oop.
If you like alley oop to yourself, yeah, and not looking and then still score. Those guys are incredible, and the amount of punishment they take. And we'll talk about the Olympics a little bit more in a little while. But I want to first talk to you about what you do, and that's Cal Poly mostly, and talk about the fall sports. We have the fall sports season is quickly upon us. I saw an email. It said it's so-and-so number of days away, and it seems pretty darn close. We're talking like a month or less, right?
All of the fall sport athletes are kind of reporting to school within the next week, I would say, or probably are already there. Camps are opening up in the next week or two for volleyball, football, cross-country. Gosh, what else do we have in the fall?
Men's and women's soccer.
Yeah, soccer. How could I forget soccer? But yeah, I mean, these are all, they're all, you know, coming in. We're going to get our first look at sort of the new players and how, you know, all these teams are going to look with the players that they lost and, you know, who's made improvements. And that's really what this next month is going to be about, just kind of evaluating, you know, the expectations, I guess, for each program.
How much time do you actually get to spend at practice? Do you make it a point to go to at least a number of practices for each team that you're going
to
cover? Or?
Well, I can go to, I mean, the good thing about Cal Poly is like all of their practices are public. So they're open. You can go and watch. I mean, that's, I just.
So anybody can.
Yeah. I mean, and you just have to know where they are and when, you know, and then you can go. I mean,
sure.
No one's going to stop you. Someone forwarded me a story today from the Fresno State website. I went to Fresno State. I'm an alum there, and I have some friends that are still big fans, and they include me on their emails like, oh, the Dogs, you know, and I just kind of, I look at them, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And one of the guys sent me a link to one of their stories today that said that all their football practices for fall camp and the regular season are going to be closed to the public and the media. So they're going to shut out everyone from every practice.
Wow.
And that's a huge departure from what it used to be. I mean, it used to be under Pat Hill, they would have, you know, they would close some practices randomly here and there, but most of them were open to the public and the media. Cal Poly, all the practices are open for pretty much every sport. So I like to go to as many practices as I can. Unfortunately, for you know, some of the minor sports or like the ones that we give less coverage to, I can't really go to multiple practices, but I'll at least go to one and watch as much as I can.
Kind of meet the people, get an idea about who, so that when you need to talk to them later on.
Yeah. So if I'm doing a preview on volleyball, I'll go to the volleyball practice, watch as much as I can, and then talk to the kids afterwards and do some interviews, videos, and whatever multimedia I can do. Right. Football's a little different because we give them more coverage. There's more interest. There's more fans.
Midweek articles, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I'll go to you know, the first day of practice, the first day in full pads, the first scrimmage, the, you know, and I'll see multiple practices of football.
Well, and with football, there's so much. I mean, everybody likes football, so that's,
well, they have more fans.
There's, I mean, there's a huge,
it's fair
fan
to
base,
say,
right?
They have, you know, 9,000-10,000 people every week for a game. I mean, that's,
yeah,
that's the audience, and that's what we gotta, give the people what they want. If there was 9,000 people going to cross country every week, we would cover cross country probably the same way we do football.
There you go. And you mentioned volleyball, and I kind of want to start there.
Yep.
I got a chance to talk with Sam Crossan about a week ago and posted the podcast on fansmanship.com. You can look it up. He seemed like a pretty chill, laid-back guy. I know there was a quote from when he was hired that Oberhelman said something like, he's exactly what we need. He's a listener, and I'm paraphrasing here. You know, he's going to do a lot of listening before he you know, before he opens his mouth or before he makes decisions about things. And he did kind of come off that way. He came off as a thoughtful guy, but not a super, like, I mean, you've been around enough coaches. He wasn't a super kind of hyper coach. He was more of a laid back kind of, I have a plan, here's what we're going to do. He's relatively young. I think he's about 31 or 32 or something like that. And he's kind of a laid back guy. How much of a departure is that going to be from the last, what, 20 years at Cal Poly volleyball? And can you talk a little bit about last year? And kind of the transition, everything that happened with the team there.
Yeah, well, I can't speak to the last 20 years of Cal Poly volleyball.
I don't know how long that last coach was there.
John Stevenson, yeah. The coach that got fired.
Yeah.
Well, not technically fired. I guess I should say that he was removed from the team and then negotiated a resignation, I guess.
There you go.
he was there in 2004. Five, I think, was his first year. It might have been 2004.
Oh, so he hasn't been there for longer than that.
No, oh, okay. He hadn't really been anywhere for longer than that amount of years. I mean, this was kind of the longest job that he'd held as a head coach. Not that he hadn't been successful, because he's been successful pretty much everywhere he's been, including at Cal Poly.
Right.
As far as win loss and getting teams into the NCAA tournament, but this had been for him like a really, you know, long tenure compared to his other jobs, because he kind of just moved up the ladder,
kind of bounced around.
Yeah, and before he came to Cal Poly was really down in the dumps in women's volleyball. They were, you know, they were not a very good program, wins and loss. They were really low rated.
Well, and from what people say, I mean, I haven't followed college volleyball for a long time. I told Coach Crossan I'm best described as a casual fan of volleyball, but from everything I gathered, the Big West used to be kind of one of the premier volleyball conferences back in the late 90s, and has kind of flip-flopped with the Pac-10 that way since then, and that kind of seems to have coincided with Cal Poly kind of being down in the dumps too.
Yeah, well, Cal Poly in the mid 80s was a high-ranked team that went deep in the playoffs and had a great reputation for volleyball and a great tradition there. Then somewhere along the way, it fell off and it got really bad. Well, when John Stevenson took over the team, he really turned them around very quickly, got them into the Sweet 16, got them into the top 25 and the top 10, right away. So, I mean, it was a huge
recruiting
turnaround.
Really good talent.
He brought some kids with him that he had recruited to his previous school. Had good teams and consistently got, you know, good top rated, you know, right, recruiting classes. And
so this being your fifth year, you saw the team under Stevenson, then you saw him last year. Talk about some differences. You know, obviously the team went through a lot last year with everything that came out. Tell me about some of the differences you saw on the court, off the court, whatever.
Well, they had Stevenson was there for the first few games, I think the first four games, and they were 3-1. They were still kind of struggling to find an identity, I guess, like, congeal.
Sure.
But they were having good results, And then when he was removed, the team went on a lengthy losing streak, and you kind of wondered, well, was it him? I mean, you know, was he really that good of a coach? I mean, you know, a lot of, even though he, you know, and let's be honest about it, when he was removed, it was amid the you know, exposure of a sexual harassment investigation into him, and he kind of, you know, he had a lot of critics at that point, but even those who were critical of the way that he ran the team at, you know, emotionally, the way that he acted, none of them were saying that he couldn't coach and wasn't a great coach. So you take this great coach away from the team, and then they have a big losing streak. They were also, I mean, it was a really challenging season because you will go from having a head coach and two assistants to all of a sudden promoting one of the two assistants and then having one other assistant, and that's it. So you go from having three coaches to do all the work to two coaches to doing all the work, and one who wasn't very experienced to begin with. So that was the challenge for the team last year. Caroline Walters, who was the assistant who took over, she rallied the team and got them in contention in the Big West, you know, in the early part of Big West play. They kind of faded down the stretch. They had some injury problems too, but we went from having a, and I'm sure everyone knows this in your job, when you go from having a bunch of people doing, you know, support work for you, and then you lay people off, or for whatever reason people leave, and then you have less people doing the same job, you know. Yeah, it's tough. It's challenging. It was challenging last year. So they'll have a huge advantage this year just in having all the coaches around.
Three coaches, right?
Yeah, Caroline is back again this year. Her and Sam worked together at Santa Clara. That's where she was from. And she was, I think she was an assistant there when he was in a,
he was at St. Mary's.
Or was it St. Mary's? I don't know. They have some tie in the past. I think her final year at Santa Clara, this sounds right to me in my brain, he was an assistant.
Okay.
And so they kind of know each other from there. I don't know. That's why she stayed on the team. I haven't talked to them yet, but she's there. So there's some continuity there from what was going on last year. And you've got, you know, a coach there that in Crossan who was really credited from the people I've talked to with the success at Cal of being a huge reason for why they were so successful. So he's coming in, he's got a plan. He's calm and confident. Like you said, they should be much better this year.
His take is kind of interesting because he doesn't know all the Big West schools, and they've got to play some of them in like summer kind of off season, you know, matches or whatever they do summer league wise. He's been able to kind of see some of what else is going on in the conference, some of the other talent, I guess, but he's kind of in an interesting kind of, well, we'll see, we'll kind of do the best we can. And we're going to see kind of where we shake out. I think this year is as much of an evaluative year for him, you know, in terms of evaluating what he has, evaluating the other teams in the conference, what he has to do to stack up and so forth. As anything else, it's his attitude on that wasn't kind of the, we're going to guarantee that we're going to come out here and get these, you know, X, Y, and Z results. And, you know, I think he's more just trying to kind of stabilize things and really get a handle on what the Big West is like volleyball wise.
Yeah. Well, when I talked to him, I just talked to him briefly this summer. It was after they had played some off season matches, and he didn't seem, you know, paraphrasing again, but he said something to the effect that, you know, we've seen what the Big West has out there. I'm not intimidated. You know, I think we'll be all right. You know, I don't know if he saw Hawaii. Hawaii's coming in.
He did mention Hawaii a number of times.
Yeah, Hawaii's coming in, and they're traditionally top five, top 10, you know, team. So,
and Long Beach State's usually not a pushover, right? They're solid.
Yeah, UCSB is good. Opponent. So, I mean, there'll be some good competition. We'll see. I mean, we'll see who shows up in training camp, how they look. And there's another thing. I mean, you go to training camp, you see who's doing well, who's fitting in, who's back from injury, who's, you know, injured, and then we'll figure out.
I'm interested to know who and this is something I'm sure we'll find out from you in the Tribune at some point, but, you know, who the freshmen are on that team too. You know, the players who came to Poly despite the tumult and kind of turbulence they went through last year. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of talent out of this class comes out. And then Crossan's first class, which really isn't this year's freshmen, it's the freshmen in 2013-14, that'll be kind of his first recruiting class at Cal Poly. Like you said, if Cal's had a ton of success and he's been an assistant coach, we know when you have two assistant coaches, usually they're on the recruiting trail in a sport like that. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what he can do that way.
Yeah. Well, for Cal Poly, the past couple of years, the problem hasn't been recruiting. It's been getting it to work on the court. They've been celebrated recruiting classes.
Have they? Okay. That was a question that I had for you.
Yeah. So if he can keep it up or even improve on that, they should be all right.
He said something about we're not going to recruit players into a system. We're going to adjust our system to match the players we recruit to, and so that's, I don't know if that's a departure from what Stevenson was doing. It sounds like he was recruiting some good talent though, as far as the team goes. I want to move on and talk about another fall sport. I talked to Paul Holoher. I think that's how you pronounce his last name.
Holoher.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, you said it. That's, you said Holoher. It, right? Okay, Holoher. Yeah. It's spelled Holoher. Holoher.
Yeah. But it's pronounced.
But it's Holoher. Yeah. Yeah.
And lucky I didn't. I asked him about it ahead of time. So that was.
Asked him about how to say it.
Yeah.
How do you
pronounce your last name?
Yeah. How does it make you feel when people say Holoher?
I didn't ask him that. I said, so is it like Holoher or Holoher or what is it? And he said Holoher, and there it was.
And then that was the period paragraph.
End of story.
Next topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Quotated. Yeah.
I always go one step further. Like, I ask the simple question and then I go to like awkward land. Like, that's kind of what my go to interview technique is. Like, I'll say, how do you say Holoher?
And then you'll
he says it. And then I'll say, well, what about when people call you Holoher?
Do you get mad about
that?
Then
what happens?
Yeah. Do they get punched in the face? No.
Yeah. I'm just giving you nuggets of journalistic wisdom here.
Fun time. Like, yeah. That's
make it awkward.
That's what I have you here for, JD Scroggin, on the Fansmanship podcast. So men's soccer, they had an interesting year last year, I think, because they played such a tough schedule. They scored less goals than games they played. They have a devout following in San Luis Obispo. I mean, they have a lot of fans. I think what was a few years ago, they were like top 12, 14 in the country in fan turnout. And they were a number of kind of one goal games or ties away from, instead of having, I think they were like 7-9-3 or 6-9-3 last year, from being maybe 9-6-3 or 10, 12 wins or something like that. I mean, they probably could have doubled their win count with a couple goals here and there. Well, obviously they could have, because they played close games. They were a highly defensive team last year and they lost a lot of their defenders. How much talent do they have on the offensive end? And is this team going to be a team that can compete, or is this kind of a rebuilding year for them?
Yeah, that's a good question, because they've been a defensive team, not just last year, but like the past few years, and they haven't really replaced some of the big goal scorers that have left in the past 3 or 4 years.
There's a guy named Zamora, is that right?
Yeah, Zamora. Yeah. He was an all-time goals leader in the program, I believe, but his goal totals, I think, kind of went down, like as his...
He was really good as a freshman. I was looking at the stats, yeah.
Yeah, and then as Cal Poly became a more defensive team... Over the past 4 years, they've kind of gradually gone that direction. He's kind of scored less and less. Still, I mean, led the program in goals by the time he was done. And they had a few other guys too that scored, that graduated in the prior years, and they just haven't gotten that production from the guys that have replaced them in the forward spots and midfields. And I'm wondering myself, was that because the strategy was, hey, we're really strong on defense, so we're not going to attack as much as we could, and we're going to rely on our defense. Some teams, that's their strategy, if that's what your strength is. So because they lost a lot of guys on defense this year, it's going to be interesting to see where they place their emphasis. Are they going to attack a lot because maybe their defense isn't going to be as strong and they're going to have to go for goals?
Right.
Do they have guys that can replace the defensive guys and they're going to remain a defensive team? Because they have been successful doing that, despite the kind of middling record that they've had the past couple of years. They've also had two, last-minute victories at home against UC Santa Barbara, where 10,000 or 11,000 fans rush the field.
Storm the field, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's no better moment in sports than that, at Cal Poly. That's like the ultimate, in any sport. Basketball, football, whatever, soccer. I mean, that's the ultimate. And so, that's kind of gotten them some signature wins. So if they keep up that strategy, you know, we'll see. It's be interesting. Yeah. I don't really know. I've got to see.
What's the Ohio State Michigan adage, or what you can pick your college football rivalry? You know, it doesn't matter what your record is. Georgia, Florida. You know, if you're the Georgia coach and you go, I don't know, 8-4, but you beat Florida, that's an okay year. If you go 8-4 and you lose to Florida, now you're on the hot seat. And it's interesting. I kind of likened this kind of like, and I know UCSB is a rival in every sport, but it seems like soccer matches get really heated. Dave Grant, who I talked to, I think on Saturday night or Saturday, I posted on Saturday, I think Saturday night, and talked about that was his first game. That was the first game he called at Cal Poly in any sport. Was last year's home UCSB soccer match where they scored in the last minute. And he told the story that Chris Giovanetti stuck his head in and said, you know, don't think every game's going to be like this because you know, it's as exciting as it gets, like you said.
Yeah, and UCSB and Cal Poly as a rivalry across all sports is huge. I mean, every sport, baseball, softball, you know, cross country, volleyball, soccer, you know, whatever. I think that in soccer, though, and I've done stories on this before because you've had men's basketball players who've been injured in like really ugly brawling type events between UCSB and Cal Poly. And like there's been some crazy rivalry moments. I think the soccer rivalry is huge because UCSB is so good at soccer. They won the national championship.
So this is my next. Yeah. So go ahead. Yeah. They won, yeah, the, they won the national 2 years championship. Ago, 3 years ago.
They don't have football. So it's their best sport. One that the students can be most passionate about because they're good.
10,000 of them can go to a game at once. Yeah.
And so it's kind of in the in place of football, because UCSB doesn't have football. The student body there has really taken to soccer. So,
and they travel here too. That's one of the reasons why there's 10 or 12,000 people, is because at least a few thousand of them are from Santa Barbara, right? I mean, they have to be.
They'd fill the stadium anyway, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm not
saying
they would.
Wouldn't, but yeah. I'm just saying, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hot ticket.
It is a hot ticket. And so the rivalry in soccer is just a little notch above maybe the other sports.
Right.
And it gets heated. You've got, and oh God, I can't believe I'm bringing this up again, but I've talked about this on my podcast as well. But the student body at UC Santa Barbara throws tortillas on the field.
That's
and
right.
It's one of the.
When they score a goal?
Yes.
Is that how that works?
Yes. They throw them. It doesn't even matter. Like they throw them whenever they feel like it.
Like a frisbee?
It's mostly when they score goals.
How do tortillas fly? Do they fly as well as a frisbee? Do you get some good tortilla tosses? How does that work?
I don't want to even dignify that with a response because I think it's such a lowbrow thing to do. Like throw foreign objects onto a Division I collegiate, you know, playing field.
So it's like, no. So it's while the players are running, they could hit them with a tortilla or whatever too.
Yeah, someone could slip and sprain their ankle.
And how do they try to discourage it at all? Is there?
Well, it's backed by the administration. I've talked to the AD at UCSB before, and he said, no, you know, paraphrasing again, but he basically told me, well, you know, it doesn't hurt anyone, so it's cool. It's a good tradition
because they're the Gauchos. And so one.
What do you mean? Because they're the Gauchos? You say that it's like 1 + 1 = 2. So they're the Gauchos. They're Argentinian cowboys. That necessarily means tortillas can be now thrown on the field. Like, does it even make sense?
How does it differ from like octopi on the ice in hockey? Because it's done during gameplay and they don't stop to clean them up. Is that the big difference?
That's one big difference, because they don't stop to clean it up.
Because like nobody throws an octopus on the ice during the game. In Detroit, for instance.
Well, there's been a lot of fan ejections. I think they're trying to clean up that octopus thing. I don't think anyone's out there like, hey, yeah, let's have octopus like during the game.
Right.
You know?
But that's my point, is that that's kind of the difference, right? Between UCSB throwing tortillas.
I think there's no cultural. I mean, I may be wrong. I mean, I'm not from the Midwest. Yeah. I don't know if you think octopus and you think like a certain like cultural group.
Right.
Like an ethnic group. Uh-huh. But tortillas are a cultural food.
Sure.
They didn't come from Eastern Europe. You know what I'm saying? So like, and I'll say this for the podcast too. Like, I'm Hispanic. You know, you wouldn't really know that from like looking at me or my last name, but this is true. This is fact. And to me, you know, when you don't know that this is a tradition at UCSB, like you don't know that this is a thing that they do. If you're just, let's say you're a soccer player from UC Davis or somewhere, and this is your freshman year, and you go out on the field and you're Hispanic.
Right. You're from Southern California somewhere.
Yeah, you're Hispanic, right. And you're playing soccer, and it's your first trip to Harder Stadium, and then all of a sudden a bunch of students are throwing tortillas at you. What are you supposed to think about that?
Right.
What?
Well, I've been in Pueblo, Colorado, where I lived for a year. There's definitely a stigma surrounding Pueblo as far as, you know, being not a stigma, I guess that's too negative. There's a perception from the rest of the state that Pueblo is not as cool as them, right? They're kind of looked down upon, both because, you know, they're down south, but there's a high Hispanic population there, and kids in other at high schools would get ejected for doing things like throwing beans on the field.
And yeah, so, exactly.
And so that's,
and that was with malice, right?
And that was with malice, right?
Now I can admit that the UCSB students aren't making a racial statement by throwing tortillas on the field. They do it in every game. They're not doing it just to Hispanic people.
Right.
They're just doing it every game. Okay.
But Pueblo East High School would go to, I don't know, wherever, you know, and get beans tossed on the field, or maybe even tortillas. I don't know. But I know that there was food being thrown on the field like that.
Yeah. And it just takes one person to interpret it the wrong way.
Right.
And then you've got a problem on your hands.
Sure.
And you know, I don't know why UCSB can't see it that way and just see, like, first of all, it's not safe to have foreign objects on the field. It's really amateur to have a Division I university college event, the highest level in the United States for collegiate athletics, and have foreign objects on the field.
Plus, there's hungry people that could be eating tortillas, man. I don't know. That's
true, too.
I don't know.
I never thought of it that way, but that is true. They're wasting food.
Maybe instead of that, maybe they donated, you know, I don't know. Anyway.
I walked into, this is the funniest thing. The last time, maybe it was the last time or the time before, but I go down there for the UCSB Cal Poly soccer matches to UCSB. And I walked in and
do they have a big stadium for soccer?
They do.
Because they had the national championship there one year. So did they like build it up for that, or did they have that existing?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. It might be a remnant from if they ever played football. I'd have to go back and look.
Okay.
I can't remember.
But they have a big stadium.
Yeah, it's like a football stadium. It's like it's about the same size, maybe a little bigger than Spanos.
Really?
It's not as new.
Okay.
Well, at least, you know, Spanos is one half side. New.
Half new. Yeah.
Yeah. but it's pretty big. It's pretty big. But the last one of the last couple times I went there, I was carrying my laptop in a bag, and they stopped me from coming in and said, "We need to check your bag." And I'm like. And I even said to the guy, I said, "What if you find tortillas in there? What are you going to do?" And he, this is part of my awkward situation to make it worse.
Yeah.
And I said, "What if you find tortillas in there? What are you going to do?" And he just laughed. And he's like, "Nothing."
So why are you checking my bag?
What are you checking for? Are you checking for a bomb? Like what?
Yeah.
You should be checking for tortillas and not letting them come in. They obviously have the manpower to do it. They're choosing not to. This is what I'm saying. This is like supported by the university.
How much does them winning national championship affect Cal Poly's ability to recruit, you think? Like, hey, we have our arch rival as a national champion. Why can't we be? And recruiting wise, how hard do you think it is to recruit against Pac-10 schools in San Luis? I mean,
I'm sure it's tough. I'm sure it's anytime you're in a mid-major program, you're not going to get, you know, the volume, I guess, of recruits that the UCLA, Stanford, and those type of schools are going to get. Yeah. But what you gotta do is, you know, get, you know, a few of those players who could play at those big time programs and get them to come in, and then you get enough of them where you can compete.
Right.
At least. I mean, that's the hope.
To kids from the Bay Area or from, I guess not, you know, Fresno, people know San Luis, right? If you're from the Valley, you know San Luis, you know Pismo, you know, you've come over to the beach. But if you're from the Bay Area, you know, San Jose, San Francisco, East Bay, if you're from LA, San Luis Obispo is kind of an exotic kind of place. It's a far away, it's perceived as being this kind of far away, small town place that's kind of close to the beach, but you're not quite sure what you're getting there. I talked to Sam about that actually, because he said he'd driven back and forth 1,000 times on 101 and never actually stopped, never been to on campus at Cal Poly, except for like two volleyball matches that they've played when he was at maybe St. Mary's or something. But how much of that is a factor? I mean, I guess it's a factor in every sport, but I would imagine, especially in things like soccer and volleyball, where there's really power teams right in your backyard that you are really comfortable with. If you're an athlete, it really does seem like you have to be kind of a different kind of a person, different kind of a personality to want to kind of get out of your comfort zone and go be an athlete at a place like Cal Poly. Is that fair to say, you think?
I think first I want to say that
most people that live in the Bay or LA don't have to drive through here. If they're going from one place to the other, they go down I-5. They're just like, okay, I'm in LA. Grapevine. Okay. Cow poop. I'm in San Francisco. Yeah. So that's what they think of Central California. They just think of, okay, there's nothing anywhere.
Well, because it's along a 5-hour drive if they do I-5. It's a, you know, 7.5-hour drive if they come along.
Exactly.
The coast,
yeah. And they see nothing through I-5. So they just think that anything in Central California is just, you know, it's
because I-5 doesn't even go through Fresno or any city.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just Kettleman City. And that's about it.
Exactly. So people go to do that trip and they think, oh, Fresno, there's nobody there. It's just, you know, like I said, cow poop. But so San Luis Obispo is kind of secluded. It's kind of like, you know, not a lot of people go there. Not a lot of people live there.
Right.
And so when college kids do come here for the first time, I mean, when college kids do come here for recruiting, it is, I think, oftentimes their first time ever being here.
Right.
But I think what sells Cal Poly
exotic
athletes,
it's like exotic for them. It's like a right. It's gotta be this, like, oh, San Luis, I either haven't considered that, or I wouldn't consider that, or I haven't and I will, or something.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, I was going to just say a big draw that Cal Poly uses is the academics. And you can point to statistics that say this many Cal Poly students, even in a bad economy, graduate and get jobs. The education is really highly respected. And I think that is reflected in the rosters of Cal Poly's sports, is that you get a lot of kids who are really serious about their academics too. So, you know, there are athletes out there that are good athletes and good academics. And I think what Cal Poly tries to do is find them, you know, find the kids who respect the degree, but are also good athletes. And that's the challenge, I guess. But it's an advantage that they have over other mid-major programs, say like a Fresno State, you know, because that's, you know, you can't even compare the two.
Right. Tell me about what your most anticipated sport for this year is. Both what's your most anticipated fall sport, and then overall, what are your kind of the sports you're most looking forward to in the 2012-13 school year at Poly, and why? I mean, we all know about football and basketball. Are there other sports, or are those the sports? What
if you're just talking fall? It's definitely football to me.
Kind of for casual fans who want to go catch a game, whatever kind of game.
It's definitely football for me in the fall because they're making the switch to the Big Sky. You know, the football program for the past, I think it's 4 or 5 years, has been in the Great West, which is has been an unstable conference without an automatic berth to the playoffs, really not respected nationally, and that was reflected in the polls. Even though they had good results, I think the conference had good results and was a strong conference, they didn't get respect, they didn't get playoff berths, they didn't get respect in the polls.
Yeah, it seems now, like whenever there was a gray area, they didn't get
benefit of the doubt. And, you know, for whatever reason, whether that's justified or not, now Cal Poly's in the Big Sky. You've got an automatic berth up for grabs for the playoffs.
Okay.
You've got more respect for the conference as a whole, so it's going to probably be easier for teams to climb up the rankings. So being in that conference situation now is going to make Cal Poly's football season really a lot more interesting just for that factor. So I would say in the fall, that's the sport that I'm most interested to see, not just because it's football, but because of the huge conference change.
The Division I teams that the football team's playing this year are
Wyoming.
That's the one.
Well, they're all Division I. I don't think they're any playing any D2 teams, but
the Division I bowl championship subdivision teams that they're playing this year.
The FBS team
that
they're playing is Wyoming. They're making a trip to Wyoming.
One reason now, I Jenny's cousin, my wife, her cousin married, his name is Karsten Sween. He was the quarterback at Wyoming 3 years ago, maybe, left-hander. Graduated from, you know, Wyoming. I'm thinking about actually making the trip up to Laramie this year.
Nice.
I got some frequent flyer miles that I can use. Give me two reasons.
You still have some frequent flyer miles left over, huh?
Hey now. So tell me a reason why I shouldn't go up to Laramie to watch Cal Poly, or maybe a reason why I should.
A reason why you shouldn't?
Yeah, or a reason why I should.
Well, I'm going.
You're going to be up there?
I booked the trip last week, so I'm
going. Dude, that's
going.
That's a reason to go, then.
To see me?
I don't know.
I've never been to it.
Because there's going
to
be other people representing?
I've never been to Wyoming, and I've never been, you know, There's a lot of places I've never been. I've never been to Laramie. I've never been to Wyoming. So
it's like 6,000 feet elevation in Laramie.
I guess. I haven't done any research at all. I'm going to have to do research on, you know, what kind of clothing I need to bring, you know, what kind of food is available, you know. I need to prepare. So I have not prepared yet, but, you know, it's always fun to see, you know, if Cal Poly is going to pull the upset over an FBS team. They've been able to do that a few times and play competitively. Whether that's going to be enough motivation for you to shell out the bucks to fly to Wyoming and then...
$10
And rent a car and stay there. It's $10 for you because you have, what, a bajillion, kajillion...
From my real job, yeah. But then you know, Carson still lives in Cheyenne, so maybe, you know, maybe I'm getting picked up and getting a ride
there
and
you go.
Getting the Wyoming baller status treatment. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know how much weight he still pulls out there.
I think that FBS game might have maybe a little less appeal than some of the FBS games that Cal Poly has played in the past. But it's just
like San Diego State and San Jose State, because they're other state schools.
Yeah,
you can pull future, Cal Poly fans.
Yeah, Cal Poly has games lined up in the future with Arizona. Excuse me, I burped. Sorry. They have game lined up in the future with Arizona State. I'd gotten a few burps like off mic a few times. I don't know if you noticed.
I didn't even hear that one. You could have just not told us.
Well, it messed up my speech pattern.
We could have just thought that you were anyway.
Okay. Well, that one got away.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. So Arizona State?
Yeah. Arizona State, Colorado State. They got another game with Fresno State coming up. Those to me are like really interesting.
Colorado State's kind of the same as Wyoming though. I mean, it's the far same distance away. It's the same conference.
Similar, yeah. Yeah, but they've had... I think that Colorado State might... I mean, maybe call me crazy, but I think that they have a bigger name, maybe.
Than Wyoming?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Either maybe than Colorado State, Wyoming. It's
Wyoming
a push,
for
I guess.
A while, like right around the turn of the millennia, right around like 2000, had a really good offense where they would just run teams up and down the field. They're at 6,000 feet, so you had to really like bring, you know... Bring your preparation, bring your oxygen, because you were going to get kind of run up and down. Since then, they've been, yeah, a little bit down. TCU kind of dominated their conference for a long time. San Diego State more recently has been a little bit better as well, and some of those other schools in the Mountain West. But, yeah, I'm seriously considering going up, so it's a possibility. Tell me about this, and I want to kind of... So football is your most anticipated fall sport. How about overall?
Yeah,
is football,
overall, men's football, men's basketball, I would say.
Why?
Because they lost, what was it, like 5 or 6 seniors. You know, they lost so much. So it's not really like I think they're going to be good. It's just kind of like a news of the weird kind of like you go to Ripley's Believe It or Not to see like the weird stuff.
Well, and they have like 10 guards, right?
I mean, yeah. Like, so I'm like, how is this going to work? And are the new big men coming in, or how are they going to work? And what's this going to look like? You've got... You know, Reese Morgan and Dylan Royer and Kyle Otister, all great shooters. How are they going to, if that's the strength of their team, how are they going to work together on the court? What's it going to look like? It's just.
And how's their defense going to be if all those guys are on the court at the same time?
Yeah.
How are they going to get defensive rebounds?
I have no clue.
Is UU going to have to play the four?
There's a huge, you know, just kind of, you know, curiosity factor, I think, with them. So that's why I would like to see, you know, I can't wait for basketball season to just see what it's going to look like.
Yeah. I'm interested to see, like, you know, with three freshmen in the front court, at least one of them, you would presume, maybe not, maybe one of them is not going to be starting, but I would assume that at least one of those guys is probably getting a lot of minutes.
I'd put my early money on Brian Bennett, who's from Chicago. Yeah, 6'9", 6'10", guy from Chicago. I've seen some tweet photos of him, and he looks to have good size, and I think that he'll be someone that they'll count on right away. The other two guys, Josh Hall the local guy, Zach Allman. Yeah, I don't know what their role is going to be. Maybe they look to redshirt. Maybe they play right away. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Because they don't have a lot of height. I mean, they lost their two centers. They lost their power forward. You know, that's always the thing that I've been thinking about since last year, is kind of what's you know, Coach Claire going to do with his, you know, are they going to do different things defensively?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an unknown, and that's always the fun thing about college sports, I feel like, with freshmen, right?
I think defensively... Well, sorry to cut you off. No, go ahead. You were going to make a point.
I was going to say with freshmen, you just never know. I mean, you could have a freshman. Usually it doesn't happen in the Big West. That's not a conference that freshmen usually thrive in basketball. But, maybe that's something that they're going to have, or else maybe their season isn't as good as they hope it is. I mean, that's I don't know how those shooters are going to get shots if they don't have, you know, a lot of guys getting to the basket or anybody that can kind of solidify things down low
for them. Yeah. I think offensively they've shown that in the Big West you don't have to be huge at the four spot. So maybe they go Chris Eversley there and have him. Maybe they play
Eversley four. Played a lot of five last year.
Maybe they play four out, one in, where you've got Eversley like running the baseline and he's kind of slashing, and they go some high low post stuff. I mean,
I could see like UU and Eversley playing like the four and five even a lot of the time.
Yeah, at some points David Hansen played the five and they didn't miss a beat. So yeah, you can do it in the Big West, but there is a point where the teams that have the size, you know, are gonna win out. Yeah. You know, so.
Okay, great. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll hopefully have Luke Johnson, and we'll be right back on the Fansmanship Podcast.
So what is Fansmanship.com?
Say what?
We're a sports website by the fans for the fan.
He wants to be a Laker.
For the Central Coast.
Catch the ball.
California.
The sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig.
And beyond.
Tim Tebow.
We love sports. Fansmanship.com, by the fans, for the fans.
Flashing clip-on nipple piercing and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free.
Yeah. Fansmanship.com, by the fans, for the fans.
We're back on the Fansmanship.com podcast. Luke, are you there?
What up, yo?
What's going on? All
right, now he's turned up in the headphones.
Are your headphones turned up?
Are the headphones turned up? I don't know. Yeah. It's all good. It sounds good.
As we were trying to turn up Luke's headphones, JD made probably the comment of the evening.
The comment during the break.
During the break, the comment of the evening went something like this. It went, I made a few rap albums, and that's like a real thing, turning up the headphones.
Yeah, it is. It's not just said for effect. It's a real world problem. Really? Sometimes you need the headphones turned up.
Wait, JD, did you really actually make a few rap albums?
Yeah, the first one, it was two, actually. I don't want to say few because I don't want to put out misinformation, but the first one was really, really underground. It was kind of like, you know, it's kind of thing you like bury and don't tell anyone.
Was it like Raffy style rap for the children, or was it like, it straight like dropping rhymes with curse words?
Well, I am a fan, I must confess, I am a fan of Banana Phone. And I sing it all the time to my 10-month-old son. So Raffy and I are on good terms. But no, this was a real rap album with curse words. I'll play it for you guys sometimes.
I have a brother who's 8 years younger than me, and I was like maybe 10 and just cursed with Raffy. By like 10, between the time I was like 10 and 12. Oh, my God. Bringing back flashbacks.
I mean, was it like, so JD, was it like the Dog Pound Bad, where there's like the explicit lyric sign that's so large takes up half of the album? Or was it like DMX Bad that had just like the little right corner taken up of the explicit lyrics?
If we had made an actual cover, it might have been kind of small.
Can we use it for
no cover? Are there parts coverless?
It was coverless, yeah, Luke. Are there parts that we can use for our intro and outro for our podcast?
Probably. Okay,
all right. We have a friend, Miles Davis, who's a rapper down in Southern California.
We should,
yeah,
for sure.
And if you get us the tracks, we'll use it for intros and outros.
Well, have you ever listened to my podcast?
I have. Tribune?
Okay, you've heard the music on that podcast?
Yes, I'm sure.
That's all original music that I did back when we were recording rap albums when I was in college. It was a duo. It was me and another guy. Our group name was These Guys.
Okay. The one that we use mostly is LPMD. You know the band Yellow Card?
Yes.
Yeah, Longinus Parsons, who's their drummer, is the LP, and then MD is Miles Davis from Cayucas.
His name's Miles Davis?
Yep. Half Asian, half white, Miles Davis.
Miles Davis, who drops the violin like it's hot.
It's good stuff.
That guy can play the violin.
I promote violins.
Yep. He can play the violin genius, and I guess he just fell in love with rap in like the sixth grade.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's why
he called his mom Judy, because they had this sort of beef because she wanted him to play the violin, and he liked rap music.
I think he's been able to put it together, though. you know, miles.
It's
good stuff, and they've done a couple of shows down there, and we definitely promote LPMD. Miles has been a guest on the podcast. Luke, have you been watching the Olympics?
Very little. I've been extremely busy at work, but I've caught snippets in the morning, so I've been sort of just, you know, checking them off SportsCenter. I saw a little bit of the U.S. game, the U.S. basketball team against
Spoiler
France.
Spoiler alert.
It's okay. I
didn't see the U.S.
You know what the funny thing is? This is probably going to get like posted like 3 days after, and people are still going to be mad because maybe NBC still hasn't aired it. That wasn't a very good burn on NBC.
And then I saw, what's his name, the swimmer who blew it for us in the, it was the 500 relay, right?
The 400 relay, Lochte?
Oh, the 400.
Ryan Lochte.
Yeah, I just saw the tail end of that, and he lost it.
What does it say about us that we can have swimmers? We've probably won like 5 gold medals in swimming already as a nation, and yet we're so just obsessed with Phelps and Lochte, and that they're blowing everything, and that, you know, the, you know,
because a guy by the name of Michael Phelps like set the bar ridiculously high. There's no way that we're gonna ever get to that ever again. It was just that sort of dominance. It was so dominant that, I mean, now if Phelps or anybody, you know, related to Phelps wins a silver, we're actually disappointed.
Right. That's how it seems. Yeah, definitely.
And you know the reason we focus on Lochte Phelps, right? The real reason.
What's the real reason?
Because they don't like each other. They've been antagonistic towards each other, and so that's why the media focuses on those two guys, because they've let it be known in subtle ways that they don't like each other.
Isn't that kind of cool? Not everybody on the Olympic team likes each other, and everybody acts like they do for 2.5 weeks, and I know that's like a team thing, but isn't it kind of cool? I mean, this is the same argument I have about Hope Solo, because she went off on Brandi Chastain too recently. She says what she thinks, and she doesn't apologize for it, and there's some thought behind it at least. Should we be criticizing athletes like that, like Lochte and like Hope Solo? I mean, I feel
absolutely
like
not.
JD's sitting absolutely here laughing.
Why
would we criticize people for being people, dude? The best thing about the Olympics, and I think the most patriotic thing, is the fact that that is real and raw. It's the fact that these guys are out for their country, and they don't even like each other.
Sure.
Pretty cool.
I want to know what JD's laughing about.
You said that Hope Solo has some intelligence behind what she says.
There's a level of thought. It's not just, okay, it's not Allen Iverson going off about practice or something that just sounds dumb. It's a take that is, somebody asked her opinion and she said it. And I know this latest Twitter thing with Chastain, nobody probably asked her, but she's been doing stuff like this for a long time, where she just speaks her mind. And I think for a country that criticizes our athletes for not speaking out, for not saying anything, for being robotic, we can't criticize somebody like that for just saying what they think if it's at least somewhat well thought out. And Lochte's criticism of Phelps, it turns out, doesn't seem that poorly thought out, does it? I mean, he said he wasn't ready, and he wasn't that, you know, great this year, and he was.
That guy's just jealous. I'll tell you that. He has the right to go ahead and speak his mind, but if you saw that 400, Phelps put us in a cruise control to win that race, and that dude blew it at the end. Straight up,
they said.
So, I think he's a little jealous.
Luke Johnson is breaking down swimming, Olympic swimming, here on the fansmanship.com podcast. Go ahead, Luke. What were you gonna say?
Yeah. I like swimming.
Yeah. No, I'm not making Great. Fun. I'm not making fun. I'm because, just resetting.
I mean, because I mean, you should see me in a pool. I'm like a rock. I just fall in the water, and
like
I somehow figure out a way.
Like a pool.
I somehow figure out a way to to like keep myself above water, you know, it looks like this mass pandemonium. So I really appreciate these guys who can swim like fish. It's beautiful.
It is, and these guys are like huge. They're my mom made a comment. She said it looks like they have like wings. Some of these guys with the what muscle is that goes down the side of your back, like the I don't know, trapezius or whatever it is. I'm not a...
Yeah, the trap.
The traps, trap. Yeah.
Traps
yeah.
is on your neck, I think. I think on the side of your... But you're talking about like your side
under,
of your body.
Under oh, your lats. Lats. Your lats, your lats, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah,
your lats. But some of these guys have such wide lats that...
Yeah.
Luke, you probably have wide lats.
Me?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I do. You know, but I'm a little bit of a thicker guy because, you know, because I've worked out with heavyweight. So some of these guys like Phelps who are... You know, real trim and super low body fat. I would guess Phelps is probably at about, God, it can't be higher than 4.5%. And, I mean, and these guys are so ridiculously cut. I mean, when Phelps just stretches his arm up, it looks like he has like a bat wing. Seriously.
Yeah, and
it's all muscle.
And you used to be a personal trainer, right, Luke? So you speak from some like some level of expertise with stuff like that.
No, I've met Luke. He's ripped.
Absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't want to. Luke is the one member of Fansmanship that you wouldn't want to like meet in a dark alley.
I don't know. I would almost say Andy if you gave Andy enough alcohol, but I don't know because I think Andy has the old man in him a little bit, you know. He's got the old man Stevens a little
like
bit.
Like, he'll kick you in the crotch straight off. Like, won't even worry about being fair and just...
No, I mean, Andy is like a super chill,
side of the
head. A super chill, kind of funny guy. But Andy's definitely got a little bit of wrath in there if you give him enough whiskey or something.
Andy's so? Father, Andy's a year older than me, so we're on the same football team in high school. I have these images burned into my mind of, like, dropping a pass. And I dropped my fair share of passes. In high school, and Andy's dad standing on the sidelines, like on the, he wasn't like a up in the stands guy. He was like a down the ropes guy and, catch the ball, Owen, just yelling red face. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if Andy has a little bit of his dad in him, that's a good thing. I really enjoy Mr. Stevens. Luke, what else is going on? We talked a little bit about this week about the, Angels trading for Greinke. When does Greinke start again? Or when does Greinke start for the Angels?
Tuesday.
Tuesday night?
Oh, no, excuse me. No. Wednesday.
Okay.
And no, hold on. Sorry. Hold on here.
Wait, Thursday.
I mean, I've been so busy that I'm lost in, you know, yeah, Thursday he will start again.
Okay. So he's even getting
first,
a little...
His first start yesterday was actually a great start. He gave up two runs on like six or seven hits in eight innings, but the Angels were blanked. They scored like they had no runs in like five hits, so he actually lost. But he looked great.
Luke and I talked a lot this weekend, JD, about the Dodgers trading for Ramirez, the Angels trading for Greinke, kind of re-energizing what's been going on in LA baseball. I mean, they're both kind of hovering in contention, but the two moves seem like they're moves that could put both teams over the top with kind of exactly what they were hurting in. And I'll use this time to diss Juan Uribe one more time, because anything but Juan Uribe is better than Juan Uribe. Probably nobody playing and just hitting eight guys through the order would have probably been better than having Juan Uribe there. Are you kind of more of a Northern California sports fan growing up?
Well, I was thinking while you were saying, I wouldn't sleep on the A's. I mean, look what they've done. They've crawled back into contention too.
They're always kind of pesky
That's going to sputter out, and I'll tell you why, because
And it's not just because you're an Angels fan, Luke.
No. Well, of course not. Come on now. I mean, that A's team, I think, is really awesome because they are that small ball team, and they are scoring runs actually the last 20 games. I think they actually scored the most runs in baseball, but that's not going to happen for too long. Jamel Weeks or whatever is not going to be, you know, stealing two bases a game and scoring three runs a game. I'm sorry.
You know who came
and
back?
They don't.
Yeah.
And they don't have the pitching that they had, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, that, you know, with that Zito, Hudson, who was the third starter in that combo?
Agent Mulder.
In that trio.
Mark Mulder?
Yeah, yes. You know, those three were lights out. So they could flat out win games for the A's if the A's had a run on four hits. But not this year. I mean, this is going to be a fluke. This is a long baseball season, and that A's team is not going to hang around.
I was impressed with their first baseman, and I forget his name, and I was also impressed with Cespedes. He's came off the DL, and I picked him up on my fantasy team, and he had a great week last week. So we'll leave that for a me and Jesse conversation. Luke, any parting shots, last words?
Last words.
Hey, well, I actually have a bet that I want to make with you. Sorry to cut you off. Sorry to ask you a question and then cut you off.
Okay.
So Dodgers and Angels, whoever, I don't know what their records are right now. Whoever finishes with a better record, we change fansmanship.com's banner colors too. So they're green and gray now. Okay,
so we change our colors, you're saying?
The colors of the website. We can change them to either blue, a blue theme if the Dodgers have the better record, or if the Dodgers get farther in the playoffs, we can kind of make this bet real next time.
Now you understand if they finish with the same record, we're going to have sort of a rainbow color going on.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, I mean, you know, do we want it to be sort of like one bold color, or do we want the possibility of having like a Care Bear looking,
backdrop? We could just keep it green. If it's exactly the same, we'll keep it green.
Okay.
Keep the graphic designer, under
save
wraps.
Save some money.
Save some money. We actually get a sweet deal with graphic design, so.
Okay. Yeah. I'm game.
You're game? All right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
We're gonna be out, and JD, what's kind of the beginning of the, what's like a date that you can kind of circle for kind of the beginning of football season, the beginning of this fall sports season? What's the kickoff for you?
Cal Poly welcomes. You're talking about like fall camp?
Fall camp, fall sports, yeah. When do people need to start? I mean, I would ask you, when do people need to start looking at sanluisobispo.com every day to get that? I mean, it's pretty much starting pretty soon here.
I mean, you should already be looking to sanluisobispo.com right now for the Olympics coverage. But I mean, as soon as that's over, we're going to hit college stuff pretty heavy and then high school stuff after that. But yeah, I mean, you know, Cal Poly football brings in San Diego for the first time. Who knows? It's a long time coming, that game. So that's kind of going to be the kickoff. I think volleyball starts before that. You might have a stray soccer match or something too before that. But
okay,
to me, that's always the beginning of the fall. First football game.
I have some going out words for JD. I want to ask a question actually before I go.
What's up, Luke?
Tell me, you know, because I mean, I pay attention a little more than the average fan, obviously, in this local area, but. But you know, I'm also a busy guy. So tell me, with this upcoming football team, give me one player on the offensive side of the ball and one player on the defensive side of the ball that I may not, that maybe wasn't the most popular player last year, but is somebody I should look out for this year.
Good question. I think offensively, everyone knows about Andre Broadus. He scored a ton of touchdowns. He's actually might be close to breaking the school record for touchdowns if he duplicates the same season he had last year.
A lot of like 1 and 2 and 3 yard runs.
They're all short runs, but if he gets all those, if he compiles the TDs again, I mean, that could be a storyline by the end of the year, but everyone knows about him. So a guy to look out for maybe that didn't have a huge role last year, probably Deontay Williams, a running back. He was behind a couple other guys, and well, I mean, he got injured. And
is he a smaller, fast running back, or is he a big guy, a la like Romanelli?
He's when he came back from injury, they kind of catered the offense to a couple of formations for him to run, kind of out of the I formation. You wouldn't, you know, that's not what you would think of when you think of the triple option with double wings,
the tailback out of the I.
But yeah, he's a downhill kind of runner, and I think you're going to see a lot more opportunity for him to run like a read option kind of shotgun deal with Broadus. And then you might see him actually line up, you know, as a deep back and get the ball.
Okay.
So he's probably going to be someone to watch out for that didn't have a huge role last year, but a lot of people know who he is because he was a big name transfer. Beyond him, I would probably say, they've got another running back. Gosh, I'm blanking on his last name. I don't want to bring him up if I can't remember his name, because how good does that look?
Okay, the other running back.
That other guy? What number is he? What's his first name?
His first name's Cole. Cole Stanford. That's it. I just needed to say the first name.
There you go.
Cole Stanford. He's a converted middle linebacker. He went to slot back last year, and I think you're going to see him utilized in the passing game and in the running game, and he's somebody that I think he got maybe one carry last year. He'll have a big role this year, I think, offensively.
Defensively.
Defensively, I think you're going to see a huge makeover in the secondary. Everyone knows about the linebackers and what they're going to do. I think the defensive line is a big question mark too, but I think they'll be okay there. In the secondary, the safety position, they'll have two new starters. And in the spring camp, it looked like those roles were going to Dave Douglas, who's a, I think, is a redshirt sophomore at this point, heavy hitter from Oakland, and Alex Hubbard, who is a JC transfer, playing the other safety spot. He's a big hitter too. So those two guys both look like they were really ready to tackle somebody in spring camp. I mean, they got, there was a couple scraps where they were shoving matches with the offensive players because, and it was because they were hitting hard. And so you're going to see, I don't think that's something we've seen at Cal Poly in the past few years, you know, safeties that, you know, really punish people. And I think that's both of those guys' strengths.
We've had more of the Deion Sanders than the Ronnie Lott safeties.
Yeah. You've had more of the safeties that kind of, you know, the ball got behind them and, you know,
Or the secondary, I guess I should say, like the guys who are the more of the, you know, like Asa Jackson was the leader of the secondary.
Sure.
Like in general. And now you're maybe going to see some guys step up that are more physical as, you know, as leaders. Is that kind of, yeah.
I think at the safety position in particular, you're going to see some hard hitting.
Great. Luke, JD.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Right.
All right. Well, this is the longest podcast we've had in a while. So we'll sign off. It's an hour and 10 minutes in. So.
Don't let that stop you from downloading it, though.
No. Well, if you're listening now, then you've already listened through, and I'm going to give you a high five. And if you tell me that you listened through, maybe, I don't know, maybe we'll do like a wall of fame on our website. I listened to the whole podcast and told Owen about it.
Put like their picture up here on your wall.
It could happen.
Go
it could
for
happen.
It.
Yeah.
Go absolutely. For it. Kind of like Man versus Food when he does his challenges and he eats the whole thing. They put his picture up on the wall.
You never know.
Yeah, I want to go ahead and I want to research a stat as well. Anybody who ends up on the wall of shame, since you already are full of shame, can you share with us whether or not you are unemployed?
Thank you, Luke.
You might be unemployed if you've sat through an hour and 15 to 20 minutes with fanship.
Either that or you might be just awesome. One or the other.
Or you might just be, hey, you can be awesome and unemployed, though.
Both.
Come on now.
Both, absolutely. All right. We will. We will catch you next time on the fansmanship.com podcast. JD Scroggin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right.